It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. In scattered towns across the United States, you'll find communities of folk from the islands of the Pacific. In the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas, for example, people from the five islands and 29 coral atolls of the Marshall Islands have been arriving in search of the same things that draw other immigrants, better jobs and education. But the Marshall Islanders also bring something else. Memories of the 67 atomic and thermonuclear weapons tests staged there between 1946 and 1958. Hundreds of islanders were evacuated from the atolls where the bombs were exploded. The blast disrupted life there and contaminated the land. Some islanders still cannot go home, and some say they still pay a price in illness and poverty for their Cold War cooperation. From Fayetteville, Arkansas, Jacqueline Froelich has their story.
6,000 miles from the Marshall Islands, there's now an islander neighborhood in the chicken processing town of Springdale, Arkansas. When school is out, islander kids ride bikes and skate between the faded houses. Sitting on a sofa in an open garage, two islander women sing to eight children, playing quietly at their feet. It's customary for women to keep children at home, says Lumen Benjamin, Arkansas Marshallese Community President. Benjamin's home, like others here, is decorated with lots of island mementos, cascades of artificial flowers, and family photographs. He concedes that islanders are here by choice, but maybe not first choice.
I miss the water, clear water. I miss the oceans. I miss fishing. I always fish every day. There are many other things that are really different from back home. We don't have any, I haven't seen any sailing canoes over here. That's our main transportation back home.
Back home, Benjamin taught elementary school. Now he makes four times as much money working the midnight shift at a metal siding plant. He says it took a while to get used to the lakes, mountains, shopping centers, even the streetlights. And he alludes to another draw besides jobs.
The hospitals, they're really big, and they're really, as another main reason, some of the people want to come over here. They want to be near these big hospitals because of their sicknesses and these things.
Benjamin's family is originally from the Marshall Islands Bikini Atoll, where in 1954 the United States conducted its biggest test, a 15-megaton hydrogen bomb. The operation, codenamed Bravo, was one of many detonated on Bikini, as well as Eniwetok Atoll. The explosion was equivalent to 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs and pulverized large portions of coral reef, irradiating the land and sea. The U.S. Navy, along with Atomic Energy Commission personnel, evacuated people, including Benjamin's family, from test sites like Bikini before the tests. They were allowed to go back 20 years later, but then it was determined that drinking water on Bikini was still too radioactive, so 6 years after that, islanders had to leave once again. In the meantime, some may have received a dose.
Right now, I have a lot of aunties and also uncles, they died. They had their sicknesses with them until their body cannot fight it anymore. I got two this year, they passed away. My sister also passed away last year because of cancer.
The testing continued for more than a decade. Islanders on nearby atolls often were not evacuated during the tests. They were deemed to be at a safe distance. Former Marshallese Minister of Health Tony DeBroom was a 9-year-old boy fishing with his grandfather on the beach of Likiap Atoll when he witnessed the Bravo test on the northwest horizon.
First the flash, which at 187 miles away still managed to blind us. And then I describe it as if we were standing under a glass bowl and someone poured blood on it. The whole sky turned red. The beach was red, the fish I had in my basket were red, my grandpa was red, his net was red. But I keep hearing him say, run, run, run to the house, run to the house. But I couldn't run, I was too scared.
Bravo's mushroom cloud rose 100,000 feet up into the atmosphere, and according to the Atomic Energy Commission, fallout reached as far as Memphis, Tennessee. Prevailing winds that morning spread fallout eastward over the populated atolls of Rongelap and Utrecht. Anthropologist Holly Barker has conducted hundreds of ethnographic interviews with survivors. She serves as a senior advisor to the Marshallese Embassy.
The fallout from the weapons started dropping out of the sky. They describe it as like a powder, like a mist that made everything foggy and fell to the ground. And they didn't know what it was. They didn't know that it was radioactive fallout. And so they went and they ran to it and they touched it and picked it up and played with it and ate it. And some people would store it in bottles or put it in their pockets, or they just didn't know what it was. And they didn't know that it was harmful to them. And so when it fell in their water and they drank that water, or that fell in their food and they consumed the food, they didn't understand the connection between starting to feel ill and the radiation.
Reno James is one of about 100 people still living who witnessed Bravo and experienced the fallout. He first felt the blast from inside his two-room thatched cabin on Utrecht Atoll, downwind east of the Bravo shot. He was 16.
And we was hear the noise, the big noise, and our island is shaking and it's lighting. Some of the tree, the coconut, fell down. And also after that, the powder is dripping down. And after a couple of hours, the people come sick. And some people, like me, I was vomiting. It's very dizzy. See, my grandfather, my father's father, he passed away because he got so many kinds of sick. Something is come out on the skin and just like a mumps. It's really big. Some kind of sickness we never, you know, we never had before. And that's why he died.
A U.S. Navy ship equipped with medical personnel arrived 3 days later to treat their radiation sickness. James now has thyroid cancer. The Republic of the Marshall Islands declared independence in 1986, but maintains a strategic relationship with the United States. An agreement allowed the U.S. to keep an army base on Kwajalein Atoll in the Central Marshalls. There, they test ballistic missiles and missile interceptors, support NASA's space operations, and assist the U.S. Space Command with satellite tracking and surveillance. In exchange, the U.S. helps pay for public education, health, and government operations in the Marshalls. And another benefit is one many prospective immigrants would relish. Islanders are free to travel and work in the United States for as long as they wish. The compact also provided compensation for damages from the nuclear testing. A nuclear claims tribunal dispensed $72 million in personal injury claims to 2,000 survivors. Dr. Neil Palafox is a University of Hawaii professor and family practice physician. He also has been a principal investigator for the Department of Energy's Marshall Islands Nuclear Victims Program. He says 50 years after the tests, exposed islanders, including those in utero at the time of the tests, those allowed to return early, and cleanup workers still live with effects, including thyroid disease, mental retardation, and many types of cancer.
The cancers that have been shown are breast, lung cancer, thyroid cancer, brain cancer, stomach, intestine cancer, skin, mouth cancer, bone cancer, liver cancer, and kidney cancer. All those are definitely known to be have been linked with the long-term effects of direct radiation exposure in high doses.
Many Marshall Islanders have other health conditions that may not be related to their special history, conditions such as obesity and diabetes. Before European explorers arrived, the indigenous Marshallese caught reef fish and crabs and grew breadfruit, taro, and pandanus in their atoll's sometimes poor sandy soils. The island's carrying capacity was limited. Infant mortality was high, with intermittent typhoons and famine. More outside contact meant food was more abundant, but now it included white flour, rice, and sugar. Locally grown foods were abandoned for convenience. Christian missionaries discouraged birth control. Dr. Palafox says the island's public health system is overwhelmed and cannot cope with the islanders' great needs.
They approached the Ministry of Health in the Marshall Islands, but it cannot provide adequate care. And so many of them actually go without the necessary care that they should receive.
Now, overpopulation, the desire for better jobs, dislocation from radioactive atolls and sickness have all triggered a Marshallese diaspora. Of the island's estimated 60,000 residents, 10,000 have immigrated to the United States, most settling in northwest Arkansas. Arkansas Marshallese cultural liaison Carmen Changom says her people have something special to offer.
It's something that we can learn, and it's not just Marshallese, but the whole world, to know that these people already experienced nuclear war. They know what nuclear war is like, you know, experiencing all the consequences of the fallout and losing their land and not knowing if it's really safe to be on their islands.
In memory of those who have suffered and died from the testing, Changom organizes an annual Nuclear Victims Day in Springdale. The 3-hour-long program featured several processions, testimony from survivors, and a church youth choir. Hundreds of islanders of all ages showed up. This year, Changom, for the first time, showed a documentary film about the Bravo test. It was eerie watching islanders sitting motionless, watching themselves on the big screen. Most, like 17-year-old Crystalani Jack, had never seen these unsettling archival images.
How did it make you feel?
It made me feel sad. Sad knowing that some of the people that was part of the Bikini Island couldn't go back to the Bikini Island because they had poisons over there, so they couldn't go back there to live in their own island.
Do you think young people talk about this? Do young Marshallese talk about this?
Yeah, everybody talks about it. Even young kids talk about it. I mean, it's a big thing that happened to the Marshall Islands. They don't want to forget it because it's what affected the people over there at the Marshall Islands.
Now, 5 decades later, the U.S. State Department says compensation to islanders directly affected by the test program should be considered paid in full. Former Marshallese Minister of Health, Tony DeBroom, was a co-author of the original compensation agreement.
The problem is that the United States is trying to limit its liability to islands that it says were exposed when, in fact, now we know that many, many more than the 4 atolls were exposed.
DeBroom is referring to the long-held U.S. government position that only 4 atolls in the Marshall Islands were affected by the nuclear tests. New estimates by the National Cancer Institute, however, indicate that all of the Marshalls were exposed to radiation. NCI researchers testified before Congress they estimate 290 more radiation-related cancers still to develop beyond 2004, especially among islanders who were children during the testing. The Marshallese government is asking for $3 billion in additional compensation.
Mr. Chairman, I submit this is a much larger than a legal issue. This is a moral issue.
In a packed Senate committee hearing, U.S. Congressman Eni Faleomavaenga, ranking member of the International Relations Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific, testified on the Marshall Islands' behalf.
The fact is the people of the Marshall Islands are still suffering severe adverse health effects directly related to our nuclear testing program, and they are still unable to use their own lands because of the radiation poisoning. We have a moral obligation to provide for health care, environmental monitoring, personal injury claims, and land and property damaged in the Marshall Islands.
But Howard Krawitz at the U.S. State Department's East Asia and Pacific desk has a different view. Tape of his Senate testimony was not available, and he declined, through a spokesman, to be interviewed. But he said the United States recognizes there are serious and continuing public health and medical challenges for Marshall Islanders. But he said the United States will already spend $16 million in health care funds in 2005 in accordance with the compact. Since the 1950s, he pointed out, the country has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on health and environmental problems related to the nuclear tests. Krawitz testified that additional expenditures in the billions of dollars are not warranted. Back in Arkansas, physicians are getting used to seeing islanders in their clinics. One physician interviewed says practitioners are learning they need to admit Marshallese patients to hospital when they first get an infection. Their immune system, she says, seem to be compromised. To better serve Marshallese with their unusual health issues, providers have been gearing up. Medical anthropologist Deanna Perez-Williams surveyed islanders for Northwest Arkansas Radiation Therapy Institute's Cancer Prevention and Outreach Program.
One of the main reasons they have migrated to the United States is because of their health. However, ideally, they would like to stay on their homeland. They would like to stay there and make a living, have the health resources, have the educational resources and benefits, because that's their home.
For now, these Pacific Islanders are choosing the Ozark Mountains as their home, away from home. For Living on Earth, I'm Jacqueline Froelich in Fayetteville, Arkansas.